living to heaviness. See, but I was here when it was interesting. Before we proceed with our meeting, we need to have a moment to come back to anything that we need to do.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to all members of the South. The Deputy Minister, myself, is on her way to reply today. I think the Minister ought to be joining us for about 12 times. Coming because she and I have agreed that the senator should apologize for the
once more of the minister without a direct word from her, because apparently the deputy minister is just relaying to us a conversation that they had, and he says she should be here. It does not appear that the minister concerned herself with yesterday's outcome of her absence by making sure that she communicates directly with the secretary. And I don't think this augurs well for the administration. I actually, when the deputy minister opened this mouth, I thought he was going to say the minister is no longer part of rural development. That's judging from the way she's treating us. I thought I would just register our concept of the show. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair President. I don't know if we're going to start a new culture in this meeting, but of course, the famous thing that we discuss apologies and checks there about the meetings and all those. I don't think we should go to that level. The minister said that the message was giving is that she is coming to the meeting. And if she is not arriving by whatever time, I mean, it's only then that we can raise this issue. But what is happening is that people in this meeting who work with the office of the minister, they can confirm how far is she. She was in the same meeting with the deputy minister this morning, as we saw on TV. The deputy minister is here. The minister has yet arrived, and she said, "What we get the commitment is that she will be coming to this meeting." And I'd like to take her away from the room that you the goodness of humankind that people are inherited, that there's something good in them, and so on. And nothing that has happened to the ministers.
Thank you, Dr. Mine is to move for the apologies to be considered and noted. Thank you very much.
Honourable Member, the comment of the members has been noted, but I would propose that we could I hope that this morning after which the minister will join us. As I said when I started this meeting, that I have noticed that the chairman made that the suitable date for the minister to be part of this meeting was yesterday. But we will continue with the meeting, hoping that the minister will join us in the process. Thank you very much. I think the comments have been noted. We expect political day to be part of the meeting. Yesterday was a suitable day. We expect everyone to be here at one beginning, very crucial issue of the annual performance of the department, and also receiving the briefing from the Office of the Auditor General. We believe that the executing authority must be part so that get the first hand information from the Office of the Auditor General. Can you then proceed with the meeting? Honourable members, we have the Office of the Auditor General here, which is the Chapter 9 Constitution. We know that the Office of the Auditor General assists with the oversighting of the financial performance or monitoring of the financial performance of various departments. They are here with us to brief us as we be considering the annual report of the department and the NGO to brief us about their findings, why they are looking at the financial statements of the department and also of the NGO. Without the waste of time, I will hand over to the Office of the AG to
thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members, for this opportunity to brief the committee. I just want to introduce to my right Ntombi Futhi Nhlongu. She's the Business Executive for the KZN Business Unit responsible for Ingonyama Trust. And then I've also got Mkolisi Paliso. He's the manager on the rural portfolio, as well as Lillian Pitting. At the date, she's also part of the rural portfolio manager. My name is Marie Kruger, I'm the senior manager on the rural portfolio. I'll be taking you through the audit outcomes for the 17-18 financial year this morning for the portfolio, and I'll be highlighting some critical matters as we go through the presentation. I'd like to start the presentation just by reading out the Auditor General's reputation promise. The Auditor General of South Africa has a constitutional mandate, and as the supreme audit institution of South Africa, it exists to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. So we try to assist the country by building public confidence through our auditing procedures. Yeah. When we go to the next slide, you will see the role of this presentation is also quite, and it was also highlighted yesterday, to assist the portfolio committee with its oversight function, and just to highlight some critical matters and the audit outcomes for the post PFMA cycle. On slide number 5, we are just indicating there that we audit the three areas of financial, predetermined objectives as well as compliance. So our opinions include the opinion on the financial statement as well as any material findings we've identified with regards to performance information and compliance with laws and regulations. On slide number 6 is the different opinions on the financial statements. So we're just highlighting what all the opinions mean when you see them later in the presentation. And on slide 7, we've just highlighted the abbreviations used throughout the presentation, as well as the audit findings, and indicating the different meanings of the errors used throughout the presentation. On slide number 9, we're just highlighting the accountability framework, and that we're highlighting one first, in terms of accountability, one needs to first plan, then one needs to do and monitor and check, and once we have implemented, then we need to act and assess the outcomes and the impacts of the performance for the year under review. If we look at the audit outcomes on the next slide, you will see there that for the portfolio, Deeds, Ola and OBG managed to obtain unqualified opinions with no material findings. Rural Development remained on unqualified financially, however they did have material findings on compliance with those regulations, and ICB regressed this year back to an adverse opinion as it was in the previous year, but I'll go into a bit more detail during the presentation on those audit opinions. If we look at this snapshot that we've provided this year, you will see there that for the portfolio, 60% of the audits obtained what we call a clean audit opinion, which is unqualified with no material findings. Quality of financial statements submitted, you will see there that we have a 60%, indicating that 60% of the financial statements did not require material adjustments after being submitted for auditing. Rural Development and ITV required material amendments to be made to the financial statement after it was presented for audit. And what one should note is that after amendments, Rural Development also managed to obtain an unqualified opinion on the audit. However, obviously, one would not look for those amendments to the financial statement once it's presented. In quality of performance information, you will see that 50% did not have material findings on performance information. However, both ITB and Rural Development had to make material amendments to the performance information after it was already presented for audit. And then on compliance, 60% of the portfolio did not have material findings on compliance with rules and regulations. So it was again Rural Development and ITB that had findings on performance information. And for irregular expenditure, there's been a reduction in irregular expenditure in the current year, and I'll just go into a bit more detail with regards to that in the presentation. But for 2016-17, you'll recall the major one was the cadastro irregular expenditure on deeds. And then for the current year, the majority of irregular expenditure is sitting in ALA that has been identified and reported. On slide number 13, you will see there that we are reporting on fruit test and wastewater expenditure and irregular expenditure. So you will see there was an increase in the current year for fruit test and wastewater. The two major contributors for the 18 million irregular was deeds, which was as a result of some litigation cases of 5 million. And then also the majority of the rest came from Rural Development, where there were some duplicate travel claims, also litigation, and also that paid to non-VAT registered vendors. It was the third large irregular expenditure. So those are fruitless and wasteful. So that's currently being investigated, also to see if it can be recovered, but as the expenditure has already been incurred, it has to be disclosed as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Then on the irregular, you will see there the 58 million that I was referring to in the previous slide, and the majority, as I've indicated, is in other. On slide 14, we're giving a breakdown of the material irregular expenditure. So you will see 80% of the irregular expenditure related to other, and that was mainly due to SEM requirements not being met, as well as the enabling legislation requirements not being complied with, because the enabling legislation indicates that the minister can approve certain financial assistance to be provided. However, the assistance that was provided was actually above the amount approved by the minister and hence it was deemed to be irregular. The other matter that we want to highlight to the committee is the fact that there's currently investigations happening at ALA to the value of 144 million to establish whether that expenditure is also deemed to be fruitless and wasteful and or irregular expenditure. And that is relating to the strengthening of relative rights program. Then on the next slide, basically we're just highlighting there the fact that all fruitless and wasteful and irregular expenditure that was identified in the previous year was investigated. So the department is quite diligent in terms of investigating matters once it is identified. However, one always needs to rather prevent it from occurring than investigating it afterwards. On the major root causes for the current year under review, we are lacking slow response in addressing or improving key controls as one of the major root causes, and the other one is instability and vacancies in key positions. So on the slow response, we took into account the fact that rural development continued to have material findings on non-compliance and adjustments to the financial statements as well as for ITV. And then on the key vacancies, you are aware that rural development has quite a number of acting positions at DDG as well as on the DG level that has contributed to the outcomes in the current year. For assurance providers, we've highlighted the senior management and accounting authority at EATS as green, and then at ALA and rural development as yellow. ICB and OBG was not assessed in this instance, as they were deemed to be small entities, so we do not perform this assessment for them. For ALA, one might ask the question, if they've achieved a clean audit opinion, why did we assess them as being yellow? Now, the reason for that is that in their financial statements, the payments of the creditors, it does exceed the 50 days. And also the collection period on the lease revenue is quite expensive. And also on the in terms of them expecting grants that has already been dispersed, those periods take a long time, and they also raise quite significant provisions for bad debts on those grants as well as on the revenue, which we've highlighted to them as being a concern. We've assessed the executive authority also as being yellow, based on the outcomes for the department and the portfolio in the current year, so that the department outcomes have not yet improved. However, we must highlight that there was intervention from the minister during the audit process when certain matters were brought to her attention, and it did actually assist in terms of getting these matters resolved. Then for internal audit and audit committee, we've highlighted the fact that they are performing their duties as required by legislation, and also in terms of our assessment of the portfolio committee, we've assessed the portfolio committee as performing the duties as required by the legislation. Then for the status of internal control, the leadership, there's ITB and rural development we've assessed as yellow for the same reasons as senior management and accounting authority. And then for financial performance management for ITB, we have highlighted it as a red, that there needs to be intervention in that regard just to make sure that those deficiencies that we've identified in the current year under review is actually addressed. Although steps are being taken to address it, it has not yet been fully addressed. On page or slide number 20, the key concerns identified, that's what I've highlighted in the previous slide, is on ALA that they do take a long time to settle their creditors, that they debt or their grants, they've raised significant provision for bad debts on the grants as well as on the revenue, that the revenue, the lease payments are not being collected fully, as well as the beneficiaries of the grants are not providing the supporting documents in order for the entity to actually expense the grants today, but they're raising provisions for bad debts with regards to that. And then we're just recommending that ALA implements proper procedures in order for them to make sure that they collect the revenue as well as the supporting evidence for the grant issue. Then the most important slide in the presentation, it is the recommendations. Now these are matters that we are highlighting to the committee to take note of for the next year, also from an oversight point of view, just to keep an eye on what's happening on these matters. The first one is the vacancy positions at the department that we've already spoken about. Now the second one is the fact that the department has entered into a project to construct new premises for them. This will be a major financial expense for the current year under review. It's something that the committee should just take note of. For OVG, they've now been listed as a public entity from 28 March 2018. So they are now required to comply with all the requirements of the PFMA and to also implement the proper processes, policies and procedures in order for them to operate as a public entity. Then for the Restitution Commission, we've reviewed the legislation for the Restitution Commission, and we've established that the Restitution Commission complies with the definition of a public entity. So although it's not a listed entity, there's no requirement for a public entity to be a listed entity. There's two separate processes. However, the Commission does comply with the requirements of a public entity and therefore have to prepare their own set of financial statements. So for the current year under review, they were still included in rural development. However, based on our review and our audit of the financial information of the Commission, it was found to be not material, and hence rural development still managed to obtain unqualified financial opinion. For ALO, it is the investigation on the SRR program that we are highlighting for the committee, as that expenditure might be deemed irregular or fruitless. Once the investigation is completed, it's currently being conducted, and that's the 144 million that I was referring to previously. And then for ITB, we highlighting there that the entity did receive adverse opinion for the current year under review, and management should establish adequate controls to monitor the royalty revenue, which has not yet been resolved from last year, as well as the split between the trust and the board in terms of the expenditure and also in terms of the value of the land and accounting for the land in terms of GRAP that would address the findings on the which is impacting on the audit opinion currently. Then the second last slide, it just indicates that we've had this slide last year as well, just indicating the what is seen as what the definition of what impacts on corruption in terms of where there is a monopoly as well as discretion and the lack of accountability, that is where corruption thrives. And so one just needs to make sure that all policies and procedures as well as the implementation and monitoring takes place in order to address any opportunities of corruption that could arise. And then lastly, just the Auditor General's contact details if anyone would like to get in touch with us. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Are there any additions? Thank you very much. Honourable members, we have been listening to the Auditor General's presentation. Can we engage in the presentation?
Thanks for the foundation. We'll just kick off with the slide there. Morning, Minister. Slide 13. I think that's where the red button is, obviously. That hopeless and wasteful expenditure. What steps did the department take to make sure that this does not happen, as far as you could see, looking at how they operate? I've seen your comments, but your comments, as far as I'm concerned, made for presentation purposes, were too casual, so to speak. Would like to know what steps were actually taken by the department to prevent this, rather than deal with a problem that was already, occurred. And then fast forwarding to slide 14. In these times of tight fiscus, wasteful expenditure amounting to 144 million rands is not going to leave anybody, comfortable. I've seen the recommendations that you have made, and there isn't much that we can do about what has already happened, but going forward, how can we make sure that this does not happen? More importantly for me is, what are the impacts of social impacts of that wasteful expenditure? Because in this date and time, we're talking more often about rights of the people. So what was the impact of that? And then lastly, on the issue of leadership, from slide 19, my concern is that whereas the issue of leadership impacts on the department, it is reflected to be 40% on the department as well as the ITB. I know that on a number of occasions we have tried to impress upon the department, including the ministry, that these vacancies should be filled in. And I know that not long ago, definitely not more than 4 months ago, we were with the minister here and we stressed to her the importance of filling in the position. We talk about the year that's gone, I admit. But we don't want a recurrence thereof. We're halfway through the financial year now. What we'd like to know is whether these vacancies have since been filled in. We can only talk in the future because we're talking about a dead ox here. But we must see if we're going to have a dead ox again. Because we need a team that can perform. And I'm saying this against the background of what has been happening as we've been going around the country as the Constitutional Review Committee, that the main criticism was that the department is just not doing what is expected and empowered to do. And we couldn't sit with the positions that are legally constituted within the department, but just not being filled in, Honourable Minister. And we're going into the last financial, we're finishing off the last financial year of the fifth parliament. And I'm sure this is not the kind of legacy you would like to go away with in case you are appointing another, department, the next year, the next year. So our concern is what is happening now since the 1st of April. How far has the department gone in filling in these critical positions? I'll say less about the ITB at this point in time. Thank you.
Let me take this opportunity to and also to remind members is what you vote to get into the decision from the department. That is where we have to ask the questions that are related to the department. When we have the presentation from ITB, let's ask the questions as the presentation which are related to ITB. But I think that we
Thanks, Chair Person. I just want to check with the AG's office on the I'm worried about this the comments that they are making about the ITB that they've received an address of human in the current period. What actually happened? An organization that was doing very well. There was a time where AG raised in a meeting, I think was it last year, that the year before last, that actually the ITB must help the department, you know, to sharpen some of their, you know, programs. I don't remember what the project was all about, but the ITB was doing very, very well. Now, I just want to check from your assessment, as people do look at the, you know, the budget, and what do you think happened? What made the bottom to fall off? Because it's like the bottom fell off and the labor thing just crashed to the ground. Can you tell us where the problems are and what measures are you putting into place to ensure that this negative impact on the ITB are corrected?
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for hosting engaging everyone else, and my colleagues also in the chair. We just wish to express appreciation for the presentation by Mr. Edward. I think we just want to express appreciation for the presentation made by Mr. Edward. Chair. On the subject, raised a part of the question that I wanted to pose. One, indeed, in your presentation, there are clear indications that you have engaged the Department of Rural Development Land Reform regarding material finance to improve the audit, and hence the audit, the clean audit facility. Now, my question is, have there been some of the engagements over the ITB, and what was the result of it? When it didn't come to as such, was you looking introduce us to the business manager of the ITB, but I didn't pick up any engagements actually to guide and send the ITB. It also getting a clean audit. Yes, you identified some of the areas in relation to revenue, etc. You know, Chair, the question relates to the staff members. Chair, you raise your hand right in relation to possible fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 134 million that's not in the equation at the moment. My question is, if you have, why is it not part of it, or are you a bit unsure whether that indeed is a regular or wasteful expenditure? One is also a bit concerned, say, that perhaps the Mr. Kobler is trying to, how can I say it, not to be so upfront with the situation in relation to Allah's training and wasteful expenditure, that you are coaching very nicely. And saying to us there is a possibility, it's not a definite, that thing. That's for us to find out in a month or so that it has always been a different situation. It's just like a worry about those two chapters.
Thank you, Honourable Chairman. And also thank you to the EC for the presentation. The issue here in IGP is the financial health recommendations. If my memory serves me well, as this committee proposed, the meeting of the Department, IGP and yourself, did this happen in order to assist where possible so that they may raise their standards of financial aid?
Thank you, Chair. I'll reserve my comments for the department. Thank you.
Appreciate. I think just to highlight on the situation at ALAR with regards to the irregular expenditure, I think what we recommended to prevent this from happening going forward or ever again is that before one implements a new project, because the SRR was a new project that they piloted, one needs to do proper research and set up the proper policies and procedures in order for this project to be implemented and monitored, especially relating to this one, that proper due diligence is being performed, and that one needs to make sure that when one implements those matters are in place, that one can properly monitor the implementation as well. As it did have a material negative impact for the current year, and it, with regards to the amount being investigated, it might continue. Just to provide clarity with regards to the 144, as at year end, one could not conclude whether that was British and West Fund irregular expenditure. A forensic investigation has now been initiated by the department to actually review this expenditure. Basically, then it will be assessed to see whether it was actually irregular or whether it is fruitless. For the 58 million, that was already established to be irregular, and hence it was disclosed as such. But we thought, due to the materiality with the non-consent, that is definitely something we just want to highlight to the committee to just keep an eye on for this current year under review. And obviously, from our auditing point of view, something that we will also look at even during our interim audit already to see what's happening with regards to that. And I think what we also highlighted to the department is the fact that one needs to be very careful, because some of the foreign projects are still continuing because the agreements have already been signed, but one needs to be very careful now with the implementation of these projects, that one has put in additional controls to make sure that these projects that are being implemented do not go the same route as the ones that has already been implemented. So one just needs to be very careful in that regard. With regards to the other questions, I think on the vacancies, as you've indicated, I'll leave that to the relevant parties just to respond to. And I'll just provide Ntombi Futhi with the opportunity just to respond to the questions relating to IGP.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Members. I'll speak specifically to what happened with regard to the regression in the results. I think one thing that's very important that members should note is that with specific to results relating to IGP, it was more an accounting related to the grant requirement for the specific areas that we raised. For the first one being the expenditure, the expectation of expenditure, we stated that it was not properly recognized between the trust and the board, and it was not comparable in terms of what was done in the previous year. And this is a very easy item to resolve, and we have made recommendations to the board and the trust to say how they can go about correcting that matter. With regard to the property plan improvement, which basically speaks to the land that is owned and respected in the book of the trust, also it should be noted that in the previous years we have the qualification basically on the land. And what has been done now is that the trust has recognized land for the first time in the book. And then from them recognizing the land, then we have to go to specific audit processes for the valuation of the land as it's been properly evaluated in terms of the requirements of the draft standard. And we've noted some deficiencies in control on that. And also, we believe that this can be resolved with assistance, of course, with the deed office for some of the land when you have to go verify and get the title deeds. And also looking at the map, we found that there were some deficiencies and some completeness in terms of what has been recorded. So I think the first step has been there that the trust has started recognizing the land. Now it's just sorting out the loopholes in terms of internal controls and the accounting of the land. And when you look at the receivables for exchange transaction, also it's a very specific graph requirement when you look at the debt that you have to impay. We found that there were some also deficiencies in terms of what was recognized in the financial statements that we impaired. There were some outstanding debtors that we believe that should have been impaired or reduced in value, if I can specify, but it was not done. And also it's a very simple issue that can be resolved. I think because it did not get resolved during the audit process, we have to conclude on this specific matter. The larger revenue, I think that has been coming from the previous years as well. The process that was suggested by the mineral resource that the ITB then prepare a plan in terms of how the revenue is distributed going forward and then get the approval from National Treasury. That approval from National Treasury where they relating to the 5-year plan has not been sought by the time that we have to conclude. So there is a process or the control that was suggested, so the trust has to work on that control, otherwise they have to then comply with the revenue being declared or sent to the revenue fund. So there was a suggestion put up front, it's just for the trust and the board to work on that suggestion and provide the 5-year plan. Those are many specific ones. I think what also needs to be noted, we have ITB regarded as the small ODT. So the four or five issues that are highlighted for a small entity, then they become pervasive when we say they become significant. So by just putting those specific ones, then it led to a regressional outcome because of the type of entity and the number of accounts that goes into the entity. I think it's very specific technical issues with very specific recommendations that can be read through. The one, a bit of a complex one, is mainly the accounting for land and the valuation of the land. With regard to the meeting, I believe that there was a meeting that was recommended and indicated, but that meeting has not yet taken place. From our side, we just want to remind the relevant groups that that meeting between the AG and the Minister and IT have to take place. Thank you for the question.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Thank you. And I think, Chair, just to add, I think the meeting that Ntombi Fiki is referring to is just a meeting for going forward. So I think just to give feedback, the meeting that was recommended, I think it was last October when we met, and there was a request for us to meet with National Treasury and the department to discuss the three entities issue. That meeting has taken place. However, this meeting has not yet concluded in terms of taking the relevant steps to also address those issues raised. But just to give feedback to the committee that that meeting has taken place.
Thanks a lot, Chair, for the second bite. We appreciate the comments made by the Auditor General and zooming on the 144 million rands. We say that the investigation is still going on. Can we agree, Chair, that we note this and we request that we be updated on it 3 months from now to how far the investigations will have gone, so that it's not a question of we submitted the annual report and we said that investigations are going on and we put that to ice and sort of forget it. So that we saw that we do follow through on this. And I'm saying this particularly because now we're aiming as the legislature to lack of government to give the Auditor General more checks so that if there are cases that may, if there's a case for prosecution, then the matter is not left hanging. Then update meeting, then we'll be able to say it looks like you need to act here. Thanks.
Chairperson, I was going to suggest that we go a little bit back and look at the last time when we talked about the tracking mechanism and the certain decisions that are taken by the community, and that we need to make a follow-up to see where are we on this question that were raised between this and that time. So I was going to ask that maybe we update that and add this other information that we just got out of this investigation, and then just check how far is the department with briefing us about the outstanding issues, despite the number, so that we don't go to bank with things that will complicate our lives as well.
Thank you very much for the briefing that you made to this committee. We'll keep in touch, let's keep on communicating, not wait for the end of the financial year or after the financial statements of the auditor. But if at least you can make to one little quarter so that we keep on updating this committee about the financial performance of the department, the pushing this committee on which are the issues that the committee needs to focus on, rather than coming at the end of the financial year where the things have been done, there's nothing that we can do, then we have to look for the next financial year where we should meet and not just can. But thank you very much. I think the briefing will assist the committee to raise some of the issues which both the department and the SEC. So I will open it to ask for that. Thank you very much. Can we have a 5 minute break to just think the Auditor General is done for the next two decisions, so that she has some time. Thank you very much. Document. And since we didn't have an ACC,
our performances could not be audited. So because they are unaudited, they are not part of this past year's report in terms of the annual report. However, in the presentation, we'll give indicative figures in terms of what we've done as an entity. I will be handing over to the acting chief operating officer, Ms. Monsonet, to take us through the briefing, especially that most of it relates to the finances of the entity. And I've also got Mrs. Mokoba, who, from the DIS office, who supported the OVG in terms of support in every aspect of our operations. Thank you, Mr. Monsonet.
Thanks, Richie. Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members, Good morning, Minister, Mr. Minister. We've got about 15 or rather 20 slides that I will go through quickly. We'll start with the financial report and a bit of a timeline from the day that the Valuer General was appointed. He was appointed in 2015, and in that year we were accounting for the finances as part of the DIS registration account. So for the period from August 2015 up to the end of the financial year in 2016, we accounted there under the DIS registration account. We did the same in 2016-17 as part of DIS, and in the past financial year 2017-18, the OVG was audited for the first time as a standalone entity. So the financial audit, the regulatory audit, was done by the AG on the OVG separately from the DIS registration account. During that audit, we received six findings, all of which were classified by the Auditor General under the category called other important matters. So you've seen the report of the AG that they categorized the findings, and these six were found under other important matters. As the DG has said in his introductory remark, we did not have an ATP for the 17-18 financial year. We have now submitted a formal ATP for the 18-19 financial year, and as we move forward, as the OVG would then be reporting on that ATP that was tabled here in Parliament. In fact, during this presentation, we'll talk to the quarter one and quarter two performance linked to the annual performance there. Of the six findings that we got during the regulatory audit, we were able to resolve four. One was unresolved. The unresolved one related to the payment of service providers. I think there were five invoices that went outside of the 30 days period. We are not able to resolve those specific findings except to put measures in place to ensure that we pay within 30 days moving forward. So that's why that one lies unresolved. Four were resolved, and one was partially resolved because it was really a matter of classification that we got to an agreement in the AG about. The next slide talks briefly to the significant accounting policies of the OVG. Most importantly, the financial statements that we prepared were prepared in terms of the generally accepted accounting practice, GRAP. The audited financial statements have also been prepared on an accrual basis of accounting and incorporated the historical cost conventions as the basis of measurement, except where specified otherwise. We also made an assumption and prepared the statement assuming that the OVG is a going concern and will continue to operate at least for the next 12 months. We know that in terms of the budget, it is intended to operate for longer than that. Management has also made and disclosed estimates and assumptions that affect the amounts presented in the annual financial statements and related disclosures, and those are mentioned in the financial statements. insofar as the analysis of the financial statements is concerned, the office realized total revenue of $8.8 million and $16.1 million for the 2016-17 and 2017-18 financial years respectively. The grant refers to the allocation received from the FISCAS. In 2016-17 we received $14.3 million, and in the 2017-18 financial year we received $64.8 million grants from the FISCAS. In the 2016-17 financial year, we received treasury approval to retain 8.1 million rand of the surplus that was realized in that year. And in this year, the 2017-18 financial year, we have asked the treasury to retain 57.7 million that lay unspent, and we are awaiting their answer. We don't know yet. As you would know, in terms of the PSMA, when you do have a surplus, you can only retain it upon approval by the National Treasury. And so far as expenses concerned, we spent 13.9 million rand in 2017-18, and it reflected a 63% increase in terms of expenditure compared to the year before. So far as assets are concerned, total assets are 8.3 million rand in 2017 and 69.1 million in 2017-18, while total liabilities are 8.9 million in 2016-17 and 68.9 million rand in 2017-18. In the main, this is with regards to the grant that we received from the FISCAS, and the fact that we are not, we regard it as a liability because whatever lies unspent has got to be returned to the National Treasury, except upon approval to retain the surplus. The next part is the Chief Executive Officer's overview to give a sense in the main of what happened during the financial year. It's part of the annual report that we have also tabled this year. Like we have said, we established in 2015 on the 1st of August. We had the Valuer General, who was the first appointee there. He is the Chief Executive Officer in terms of the Protective Valuations Act. He is the accounting authority in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, insofar as Section 3A public entities are concerned. During this period, the VG has spent time getting the office off the ground and creating an organization as envisaged in terms of the PSMA, the PDA itself, and in the script of the National Development Plan. Insofar as the performance of valuations is concerned in the OVG, the overwhelming majority of our valuations were outsourced. They were done by valuers in the private sector, and the reason is because the OVG does not have the capacity as yet to do valuations on its own. It's something that the OVG has decided to increasingly reduce and rely more and more on its own capacity internally, and that is reflected in the draft organogram that we have at the moment. Insofar as the relationships that we have with the department, we have been receiving support from the Chief Registrar of this office, insofar as supply chain management is concerned, finance as well as human resource management. It did place considerable pressure on the resources of the OCRT, but nonetheless, it has worked for us, and the support that we have been receiving is appreciated. The OVG is in the process of putting into place its own SCM, operational HR, finance, and other policies, along standard operating procedures as well as delegations of authority. We noted that it is a recommendation that the Auditor General just made to the committee. We are in the throes of that process, and a lot of such policies have actually been finalized. As it stands, the OVG has got a healthy relationship with the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. We also have a healthy relationship with the National Treasury insofar as our funding are concerned. We are sufficiently funded given the startup nature of the OVG, as we are in the ENE and for the MTEP period. Whatever would be any additional funding required would be a subject of the usual budgeting cycle that we undergo in government. We received 64.8 million grant in the 2017-18 financial year as the OVG. This part B is a part that is in the standard template of the annual report for all the government entities. We do emphasize that this part is unaudited. What has been audited insofar as the OVG is concerned is the financial part. So we received a clean audit on the financial audit. Insofar as performance information is concerned, we say upfront that it is unaudited, and the reason was because the OVG only submitted a performance plan, annual performance plan, and a strategic plan from the 18-19 financial year. However, the Governor General was of the view that we detail what we have been doing during the 17-18 financial year for the benefit of the taxpayer and the reader of the annual report. So we've made the point around the APP. The first point that we wanted to detail is the establishment of a program on land reform valuations in collaboration with the South African Council for the Property Valuers Profession and the University of Cape Town. So what we have picked up is that valuers in private practice are in the main trained to determine market value insofar as when they do valuations. They use a number of methods, but in the main they determine market value. But when we look at the Property Valuation Act, it requires that you determine a number of other factors. Members would be familiar with them. The factors that are contained in Section 25(3) of the Constitution, which is market value, the current use of the property, the extent of the state investment in that property, the history of acquisition, and the purpose of acquisition. So the Property Valuation Act uses those factors as well. So when we instruct valuers in private practice or our own valuers internally, we expect of them to produce valuations in line with the PVA. But you do not have a throughput of trained valuers from the academic sector who have been trained to do PVA valuations. So the OVG had to step in, working with the Council for Valuers and the University of Cape Town to produce this program so that valuers could be taken there. I think it's a 5-day course that happens and here at UCT, but sometimes UCT does do it in other provinces like Gauteng. So the valuers are then trained to do valuations in line with the PVA, and this is one of the things that the OVG was busy with in the last year. So the OVG has made this course compulsory for all property valuers in private practice who would like to be on the panel of valuers of the OVG. The current panel that we have we created this year, and for the first time we required that valuers who do our valuations must do it in line with the PVA and the proof that they would be competent would have been to complete this course that we're doing with the UCT. The OVG has got a total of 10 professional valuers, including associated valuers, and this number includes the valuer general, who have been trained to ensure that they are competent in conducting valuations in line with the requirements of the valuation for land reform and expropriation. This is the name of the program that we do with the UCT. We call it Evaluation for Land Reform and Expropriation, as well as applying the five sectors accordingly in terms of the PVA. This course has been done in August of 2016, November 2016, May and July of 2017, and July of this year as well. Insofar as support to the department is concerned, the OVG started doing valuations in August of 2016 with four professional valuers, including the VG, It has recently appointed 6 new valuers in June of 2018 to ensure that the issuing of valuation certificates for land reform purposes is fast-tracked. The OVG has helped the Land Redistribution and Development branch of the department to meet the targets for the, in the financial year of 2017-18. We continue to support the department's branches, the commission, the LRD, land tenure, as well as property management with their requests for valuations. We have also done valuations on behalf of other departments in terms of the Property Valuation Act. The OVG is allowed to do valuations on behalf of other government departments, and so far we have done valuations for the Department of Water and Sanitation. Insofar as office setup is concerned, the development of regulations, the OVG developed draft regulations in line with the PVA. They provide for the criteria, the procedures, and standard guidelines for the valuation of properties that are identified for land reform, for acquisition and disposal purposes. They have been published. They were published on the 21st of April in 2017. That process is quite close to being finished, and the regulations being published. Engagements with regards to office accommodation, we have been now able to move to our own office accommodation in Pretoria from April of this year. It's a process that we undertook with the Department of Public Works. Insofar as creating the OVG as a corporate entity, we have got a program, or rather a project, called the Business Operating Model, where we are where we've produced the strategy document. We have produced a document on long-term funding model of the OVG, where we are busy with processes around client engagement, defined information technology requirements to support business processes, defined human resources capability requirements to support the business processes, defined infrastructure requirements to house the business services of the OVG, the organizational structure that I referred to earlier, and then a set of policies, financial policies, systems, procedures, forms and delegations of authority, as well as HR policies. These are all deliverables that we are expecting out of the business operating model project. That is all insofar as the annual report is concerned, but in the letter we were required to also talk to quarter one and quarter two performance, and I'm going to start with that now. In terms of financial performance for Q1, the OVG has spent on compensation of employees 2.4 million rand, which represents 15% of what was set aside for that quarter. On goods and services, 1.2 million rand, 5% of what was expected for that quarter, and in total is 3.7 million rand that has been spent, and it represents 9% of what was expected to be spent in Q1. So far as performance information is concerned, we have extracted only the indicators that are relevant for quarter one, where delivery was expected for quarter one. So the first indicator in terms of the APP that was tabled in Parliament, the first indicator is the number of completed valuations expressed as a percentage of total number of valuations for land reform referred by the department to the OVG for the period per the agreed annual plan. So in Q1, we were expected to reach 100%. We had included numbers there, 229 valuations for restitution and 23 valuations for LRD. In terms of performance, we have done 312 restitution valuations and 38 LRD valuations, all in all achieving 139% of the target, meaning we have exceeded that target. The reason for the variance is some of the valuations that were conducted on quarter four of the previous financial year were only quality assured and finalized in Q1, and that's what pushed up the numbers for quarter one. The second indicator is criteria, procedures, and guidelines determined to standardize valuation practices for land reform valuations, cumulative progress per plan to be approved by the Valuer General. Q1, we had to have completed research on the development. We did not achieve it in Q1. Research on development could not commence as a deviation on the appointment of a provider was finalized in June of 2018 due to procurement delays. The appointment of the provider could only be finalized in July, but we are on track with regards to the annual target. So the much as we missed the Q1 target on this one, we are on track to achieve the annual target. Insofar as the third indicator, it's completion of that project that I spoke at length about. We were supposed to be at 25% of that project. We achieved 50%, which is higher than what was required, because some of the deliverables were signed off in Q1. This performance has been independently verified by the monitoring and evaluation team of the department. So we have requested them to come and do an independent verification of this work. And what you are presenting for quarter one is as such independently verified. For quarter two, because we are only in October now and up to the end of September, that verification process is only going to take place sometime next week. So what I'm presenting for quarter two now will be performance as we see it as the OPG. So far as the financial performance is concerned, in quarter two, we spent 1.2 million rand for compensation of employees, which is 7% of what was set aside for Q2, 784,000 for goods and services, 6%, and 2 million rand in total, which is 7% of what was set aside. These numbers are also preliminary, they are not final, because the final accounts are still coming for the quarter. Insofar as performance is concerned, we have that same indicator about valuations. I will not read it again. We met that target. We exceeded it by 1%. We were supposed to do 357 restitution valuations. We did 362. We were supposed to do 54 LRT valuations. We did 55. Insofar as the criteria, procedures, and guidelines, the one that we did not achieve the quarter before, that has now been completed. The development is now 100% complete insofar as we are concerned. Insofar as the operating model project is concerned, we are at 50% as required. For quarter two, we had more indicators, more work that we needed to do. The fourth indicator is the number of potential target clients surveyed. If you look at the APP, you'll see that the OVG saying, because the PVA makes provision for us to be able to do valuations outside of the land reform space, we need to do work to introduce the OVG and actually do work for the other departments. So we had to do a survey in Q2 and survey at least two clients. We have achieved that target. We have surveyed two clients. The next one was the establishment of an independent quality review and assurance mechanism within the OVG. We ought to have had four committee meetings during quarter two. We are only at the stage now where we have advertised the independent quality review committee, and the VG has produced a draft of the terms of reference for the committee. We did not achieve this because we are only at the stage where we are when we are appointing members. It is going to be populated by professionals from outside of the OVG, and those adverts have gone out. So this is not achieved. The next indicator is number of people that are attending the designated land reform valuation training courses. It is the one that is being done in collaboration with the University of Cape Town. We needed to have 5 people attending. We sent 6 valuers that we have appointed during June of 2018. Insofar as the next indicator is concerned, it's the number of valuations that would have to be reviewed by the committee that I referred to earlier on. None were done. We're supposed to do 14. Those 14 were not done because the review committee is not yet in place. The next indicator was maintenance of property data. Quarter 2 target was a feasibility study for the development of the property data management tool approved by the VG. The feasibility study is not done, so this is not achieved. And the reason for variance was capacity constraints that led to the deferment of this target. I think the point that we need to make is on all of these indicators and targets that we were not able to achieve in Q2, we are on track with the annual target, and we are working to catch up during this third quarter and in the fourth quarter as well, so that at the end of the financial year we have met them. So far as management support is concerned, the Office of the Valuer General did not have any investigations in terms of Chapter 10 of the TFMA. The OVG did not request for a budget realignment during the 1920 financial year and 2020 and 2021. Only a request to an inflation-linked increase for 2021-2022. The budget realignment will be considered during the finalization of the new budget cycle if we need to realign, because at the moment our budget is not program-based, but we are considering that we present our budget on the basis of progress. Like I said earlier on, we have requested retention of surplus. We are yet to receive a response from the National Treasury. I'll stop there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. One of the main challenges at the HPV had was when the Act was passed to become effective, there was no phase in terms of an implementation plan. So the OVG is expected to implement the Act straight away from the 1st of August 2015 without the person, without any staff, and it was a huge challenge. So when the AG was auditing our financials, it came up as an issue because the AG expected that immediately the Act came into operation, the OVG complied. That's the first point. It's something that we just need to mention. The second point is, if you watch our output in terms of the performances for quarters 1 and 2, you observe that we've now been speaking to the department and the branches. So what we have observed is, even though we have met our target, these have not been translated into actual purchase of property, because it takes time for the branches to translate our valuation into office. So you would probably observe that the branches would not have achieved their target because we didn't allow for the lead time to give them enough time to translate the valuation of the process. Thank you, Chair. We'll pause there for comment and other points of clarification.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Adela. Then Honorable Bandana, Honorable Bandana, Honorable Bandana, and then Honorable Bandana.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. One of which will express appreciation for the OBG for the excellent report. Jane, one piece of it, but just for clarification, there is a big gap in terms of staff, Jane, and one certainly expects that the OBG will soon take us into its confidence in relation to filling all those vacant posts, Jane. With regard to the training, it will be very much good if we will be exposed to the content of the land reform and expropriation course, Chair, that have been on offering since August 2016. Now, Chair, at the moment, there are 10 valuers. 6 of them were appointed in June this year. And one would assume that the July training, as indicated, targeted doses. Who was targeted in July 2017, May 2017, November 2016, and August 2016? And if the course is 5 days, it means there are sets of training that are taking place. And there ought to be a fairly long list of valuers who have completed this course. Chair, one would wish to have access to the list of valuers who have been trained, so that we indeed have a sight of whether they meet our employment equity target, Chair, that they indeed come from the disadvantaged courses, both for me it's very, very important. Now, Chair, the OBG is the Honourable Minister is one of the biggest weapons of this department in accelerating, fast-tracking and making land reform more economical, Chair. Now, one certainly would want to have access to understand whether that objective has been reached, whether the prices for, that we don't want to have another mala-mala where we paid more than $1 billion, Chair. One would want to see those kinds of things happening, and as the OBG said now, the valuation has not been translated in actual offerings or purchases, so that makes it a bit difficult, but I'm quite sure the valuation would clearly determine what should be the price range that the branches should engage in, and one would want to see those kinds of things, whether this weapon indeed is it's not a blunt weapon, it is a sharp weapon, and a weapon that can indeed make a difference, Chair. And one actually hopes and pray, Minister, that we will see among those lists a clear indication to say these land must be expropriated without compensation based on the 5 criteria. Chair, one certainly wants to see that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I also appreciate the presentation from the OBG. The OBG, there's no report in terms of employment equity. What is the status in your report? If constitutional amendments to expropriate land without compensation is passed by Parliament, how relevant will the office of the OBG be? When are Provider Information Act regulations expected to be ready for presentation to this committee? TVH regulations. And there are no time frames of the development of the business operating model. And lastly, that is on page 16, we're talking about life and death of the people when we're talking about land. Why no research on development because of procurement delays? Is it because of procurement delays? It initially mentioned that. I request your office to be sensitive and prioritize these issues, please. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Office of the Evaluator General for a comprehensive report. It seems as if you guys have done quite well, considering the challenges that you have. I just have a few questions for clarity on my side. On page 6, we speak about the allocation received from the fiscus in terms of grants of 14.3 million and 64.8 million. Maybe it's just me, but I don't see where they are reflected on the above graph. If it has to be, could you just please explain that to me? It could be a mistake on my part. And then secondly, on page 11, you speak about having helped the Department of Land Affairs to meet its targets in the financial year, and then the CEO was saying that you mustn't expect the branches, because of the lead times, you mustn't expect the branches to have, you know, to have reached their targets, even though you have reached yours. What are you going to do to improve on those lead times and work with the department to make sure that that does not happen again? And then just another side question. On page 15, you have spent in quarter one 2.4 million on compensation of employees against a total of 16.9, an expected total of 16.9. And then on page 17, you seem to have spent less on compensation of employees. Could you just explain why? Has somebody left work, or what is it exactly? Could you explain that to us? And then the last question on page 19, you speak about establishment of an independent quality review and assurance mechanism within the OBG. But then you go out again to say you have advertised the independent quality review committee, which to me, you are advertising an independent quality review. So to me, the two statements don't go together unless I'm reading it wrong. Is it an outside, is it going to be considered of outside people or people within the your entity? Okay, thank you, Chair. I think that's all for my side.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. And thanks to the OBG for the succinct and crisp presentation. My first question is based on slide 8, and I would like to know by which year or quarter of a given year would your office have its own fully fledged team of valuers? I'm aware of the fact that you say you're using outside valuers, but therefore talking or thinking here about the team or the panel of valuers that will be using to say I've got now a full complement. Slide 10, you talk of market value being mainly used by your office. What impact does that have on the budget of the department? Just your valuation and somebody else pays. Although, of course, the CEO
where, you know, expressed, you know, himself very well to say that the office does take into account a whole package of issues, but initially stressed the point that mainly you were talking, you're guided by the market value. So my question therefore is about the budget, about the impact thereof on the budget. Perhaps right there I might as well pass forward to my next question, which is, on what consideration would your office ever find zero value for a property? Because all that is provided for in the Constitution has so far been interpreted to mean some kind of valuation. But I'm asking this question in view of what is taking place in the country. One, that within the legislature we have now suspended the Expropriation Act to which you are referring, the one that was being handled by public works. It's been put on ice in anticipation of one result or the other of the CRC process resulting in the amendment of the Constitution. So there is a legislative process which may culminate in the amendment of the Constitution resulting in zero valuation, zero as in rent. And that's why I want to know from your office as to under which circumstances would your office, in anticipation, ever say we are zero valuing this property. The reason I've asked this question is because we have not yet seen your long-term strategy presented to us. And I've noticed the fact that, you know, with the regulations and the like, this is yet to go to the minister and suppose finally to cabinet. And therefore, we do not as yet know how you have strategized. I concede the fact that, you know, where you started off and hit the ground running. And I must say that we pretty much appreciate that, even though there wasn't much preparation like you indicated to us for you to hit the ground running. And we very much appreciate that. And that's why I'm asking these questions. If you like, you could interpret them as being suggested of what must still be done by way of adding either to the regulations or to your long-term strategy. But specifically, I think as a committee, Honorable Chair, would want to see that long-term strategy, because we don't want to question the actions of the Valois General, only to find that we blame them offside, whereas their regulations as well as their long strategy says this is how they are supposed to do things. So I'm just opening up you know, something for discussion rather than just a straightforward question, yes, no, you know, kind of thing. And this is why it was important for us to have the political heads of the department, so that there is proper coherent responses by the department, and the administration doesn't say one thing, whereas the political head of the department is thinking of something different. So that's why I say it's not a question that I'm putting for a yes, no kind of thing. Let's have a common understanding of where we are and where we're going. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks, Chairperson. In this committee, we have a Chairperson, Member Nyamavila. She puts her foot down when it's time to put a cook. She has a foot to put down to us as members of the committee. OVG, do you have a foot to put down in this evaluation? Can you say this is my way, that is the final way?
I just wanted to, you said in your report that you were approached by the Department of Water and Sanitation and Public Works. Honorable Mangala has talked to that. But I just want to check how many properties did you evaluate for them? Can you give us a list of those properties for both departments? And at what cost to the OVG's office? Were there savings? If there were savings, what did we save it against? What is it that you gained out of that?
apart from what our role is as the office of the OBG. And were those evaluations accepted or rejected? If they were rejected, what were the reasons for the rejections of the evaluation? And what other, you know, what processes do you follow? Did you follow to reach whatever conclusion that you have reached? There's some more ways that we have actually done within evaluation for the private sector. Or should I say, have you ever done them for the private sector? And what is this that they stood to gain in going to the OVG and going to the conventional, so-called conventional evaluators? You're coming in to think this office or the establishment of this office has actually changed definition of or what valuation, property valuation means, and or even including in land and property valuation. The restitution, the division, the commission particularly, I mean to say, they underperformed in their last report when we meet with their report. And some of the reasons of the underperformance was because of the time it takes for the OBG to appoint or to evaluate the to do the evaluation work. But and at the same time, the OBG's office in appointing those who are supposed to do the work on their behalf. And that would mean not only appointing, it would include even monitoring what those people are doing. What are your plans? Do you have plans on, you know, to change this unfortunate situation with the commission? Because we cannot let a division or an entity that is equal like yours, because they are standalone like you are now, even though you are just, you are newborn babies, I think you are, you stood alone as from the from March this year. But what are the plans? Do you have any plans for instance to make sure that this unfortunate thing doesn't recur? Thanks, Chairperson, but do you really have a foot to put down?
Why in the first quarter it was 2.4 and in the second quarter it was 2.4. going on. While I was looking into that establishment, you have six regular, you're supposed to have six. This, according to the staff establishment, you expected to be regular, including the DG. But you're talking of 10. Can you just clarify that? Because that 10 must be in line with your staff establishment. But looking at your staff establishment, you are at six, including the BG, but they're talking of 10 regular. In most cases, whether it's the department or the entity, they're spending more on food and services. Can you unpack that? What is contained in this food service? Over to you.
Thanks, Chair. I'll go through the responses as the questions were asked, and my colleague in finance will give me some of the financial questions. So the first thing is the gap in terms of staff currently that we have. That was the first question. We have now finalized our structure, and we had a meeting with the minister on Friday, and I think the structure is almost now ready for implementation. So we'll be having a, in terms of the arrangement, we'll have an implementation plan of that structure and begin to fill that structure vigorously. Now, the training that has been mentioned has mainly been with evaluators in private practice, because as a profession, traditionally, evaluators are trained to market value. So the issue of just the equitable is a new concept. And so we needed to ensure that the PVA complied with. So for those valued in private practice, we have to ensure that they are trained in terms of how to deal with all the factors in terms of valuation, not just in terms of work. Now, so the initial target of the training was for those in the private sector who are contracted by the OB We started in August 2016. We had about 40 valuers who were in private practice. The second batch was about 30 valuers. But in total, we trained about 120 valuers in private practice in terms of dealing with valuations for land reform. In addition to that, we have also now trained the 60 valuers employed by the OBG itself recently in July. So they also formed part of that training. The request is to provide a list of the valuers trained, and we are open to that. We can submit that to the committee. Now, the issue of valuers and employment equity targets, unfortunately, I can report that the training has not met the equity targets. Why is it like that? Traditionally, the valuation profession has been white, and white means of use. So, the OBG doesn't have much of a choice in terms of training these professional valuers. Remember, they are already trained as valuers. So what we are doing is to get them retrained in terms of non-reform valuation. So they are a crop of valuers already in private practice. So we can safely say that we actually have not met the equity target in terms of training for valuers. Since to that, and that is that what are we then doing about it as a OBG? What we are doing about it is this, in collaboration with the Council for Valuables, the OBG is going to undertake a study of the profession as a whole. We've already agreed on that, and we've got ministerial approval to go ahead with it. And that is to say that the valuation profession as a whole needs to be relooked at, right from the academic institution, in terms of what is offered. Because the program as it stands currently does not speak to the developmental needs of the country. So the whole profession itself needs to be relooked at. And that's the way it began. The OBG is one of the areas that's been formed to pass that land reform. Unfortunately, because we are still in our formative stages, we have not been able to achieve that. The long-term strategy is to ensure that we do that. But as it is currently, we will probably, when the department presents, that one of the reasons their targets have not been met is because of the OBG. And truly so, because we are still in the formative stages. Secondly, we didn't take into account the lead time we take for the branches to translate our valuations into offers. It takes approximately about 3 months when we submit the valuation for them to go through their processes. So what we have now, the activity we have now put together ourselves as a team to communicate better. And what the intention is that, for example, we should be finalizing all the valuations for the branches by the end of December, so that they are able to translate all this into offers for quarter four of this financial year. And going forward, we then need to plan ourselves in such a way that we provide valuations, and our target should be such that when we produce a valuation in quarter one, we know that that's only going to meet the target of everyone in quarter three. So we need to structure ourselves in that regard. The five factors that have been listed, whether it deals with expropriation without compensation, and whether if the law is passed, what would then be the status of the OBG. We think that as an OBG, we will still be relevant even if there is a law passed in terms of expropriation without compensation. Even if a property is going to be appropriated, you still have to determine what the value is before it is appropriated. So, in summary, our role continues. But also, we don't only do valuations for land reform. We also deal with valuations for acquisition and disposal, as requested by other departments. The regulations to the Property Valuation Act have now been finalized. It is not going to go through a cabinet process. The minister has had sight of it already. The public participation process has been completed. We think that in the next week or so, these regulations will be gazetted and become enforceable. And that gives much power to the OPG in terms of enforcing the situation in Section 253 of the Constitution. We have not made a presentation to the committee, but we think that that can be done. That can be added in terms of the regulation. Unfortunately, we cannot stop the gazetting of it before we present to the committee. So we will do that anytime the committee has that to invite us. But all the processes have been gone through. It's ready. It's impacting on our work. So the minister has instructed that it be done as matter of agency, because it affects other processes in the land reform space. The time frames for the development of a business model, the business model has been completed, even though we didn't say time frame. It's been completed, and that has informed the proposed structure that the minister has considered already. Like I've mentioned, the structure has been considered, and an implementation plan will be put in place, and any time from now, we will complete that structure. The establishment of a quality assurance and rating committee is mainly going to consist of professionals from outside the OBG. It's going to consist of academics, it's going to consist of evaluate in private practice, it's going to consist of a chartered accountant, and it's going to consist of someone with a qualification in agricultural economics. We have advertised, and the advertisement closed last week. The panel will be set up very soon, because in terms of our APK, we have actually missed the target for that performance. So we think that from the beginning of quarter three, this committee should be in place to start doing the quality and assurance review. So it is an independent body that is not part of the internal structures of the OBG. And their main role is to review samples of evaluations that have been performed by the OBG, both internally and externally, and also advise the OBG in terms of the quality and improvement in the quality of evaluations that have been performed by the OBG. There was a question around market value being used as a basis for evaluation. I think what we try to explain is that so far, market value has been the basis of valuation throughout the land report. But since 2016, that has changed. So we don't really consider market value as the basis of valuation for land report. In fact, the Property Valuation Act mandates that we consider all the five factors. So all these five factors have been translated into quantitative values. And that has been reflected in the regulations that are going to be adjusted soon. If you recall, in our last engagement with the committee advised that we put together some kind of formula in terms of determining values for just the equitable purposes. And the regulations have reflected that aspect of the law. Does the OBG put down in terms of value? Yes. In terms of the Property Valuation Act, the OBG must perform its duties without fear or favor. So we don't look at whether the valuation is for the commission or for a person. What we do is to apply the principles of valuation. In fact, we've had already cases in court because we have put our foot down in terms of values that we have put on properties for acquisition by the commission. Water and sanitation, we have carried out, I'm not sure, but if you can confirm, I'm not sure how many valuations we've done yet, but if I recall, we just completed a set of 18 valuation reports for water and sanitation where they are compensating owners or occupants around some of the dams that they're expropriating from those people. It's mainly compensating for the rights that are being expropriated from those people. So we still apply the factors in terms of the property valuation as when we carry out those valuations. Generally, both the department and the owners have not objected to any of the valuations submitted so far. So we take it that they are happy with the outcome of this valuation. Are there any valuations done for the private sector? No. The law, the PVA, only allows the OBG to work for departments. So we don't carry out valuations for the private sector. The question of whether the OBG has contributed to professional development is what I referred to earlier on, in that there's collaboration between the Council for Valuers to undertake a complete revamp of evaluation curriculum in the country, as well as how professionals are trained for this profession. The commission would have presented already that they did not achieve their target, simply because of what I explained earlier on, that when we started, the OPG unintentionally did not consider the lead factor required by the commission to translate the evaluation into offers. And that is one of the main reasons why they have been able to meet their target. There has been delays in the appointment of the value review committee, not intentionally. We had a few challenges in terms of the composition of the team. So that has delayed what has gone into the aspect now. That's all been sorted out. The terms of reference have been developed and the adverts are closed. The shortlisting will happen soon and we do think that we should be able to start working from the third quarter of this financial year. I would leave the rest of the questions to the finance people.
Thanks, Richie. The question on the cost, the financial education, I think we are spending about 8,000 rand a person for the UCT cost. So it would be 8,000 rand for the six people, and because they came to Cape Town, would have the cost around 8,000 and that travel. So in the main check, those would be the costs attached to the July training that has taken place. The six versus five, that is in the part of the quarterly performance. So we do have an ATP. When Minister arrived, we submitted the ATP for 18-19 financial year. So we are reporting against the first two quarters of the 18-19 financial year. So those six are actually against an APP that we have presented to the committee that was approved. So the part where we did not have the APP was for the 2017-18 financial year. But like I'm saying, where we are reporting training, we are reporting training for the first and second quarter of the financial year. Insofar as COE is concerned, the cost of employees for quarter two, the system has not closed as yet. So those numbers will change when the accountants finalize their work for Q2. So that 2 million and then 1.2 million will change. The quarter one numbers will not change, but the quarter two numbers will change as they finalize and close the books for the quarter. The spend on goods and services. In the main, it's what we pay to vendors in private practice. So we run a normal supply chain management and procurement process. We appoint a vendor, they go, they do the work, they submit an invoice, and we pay them and we post those expenses against goods and services. So when you look at our spend, it will be in the main work, technical work that was done for the OPG by vendors in private practice, as well as your usual things like office equipment that has been bought, the usual stuff that you post, training that has happened and so on, the issue of the staff establishment, I don't know which document we were looking at, but I think the main point has been made by the VG, which is that there is now a new structure, and I believe that structure would then be shared. Insofar as vendors that we could currently employ, it's the six junior vendors that we have, it's the three who are senior managers, and then it's the vendor general, and we've got about three positions that are in middle management that were created, those posts were created on an ad hoc type of basis. But I think the analysis of the staff complement of the OVG will now be clearer to the committee and more possible given that a structure has now been engaged with between the minister and the Valuer General. Okay, the 57 million rand. When we wrote to the National Treasury and met them and had a discussion, we said one of the things that we did not anticipate fully was the extent of litigation. The OVG is getting cited more and more in papers in court, and we're going to use some of the money to set up a legal muscle for the OVG. So far as systems are concerned, to be able to receive these court papers timely, because sometimes, in fact most of the time, we find that they would cite minister, they would cite the department, they would cite us, but we will only receive some of their papers quite late. Sometimes we find out after they had already kind of gone to court and said applying for a court order. So in the main, what I'm saying around legal matters is to get a proper outfit in place for the OVG to be able to manage the flow of legal matters and also to be able to get systems in place. Secondly, the valuation system that the Valuer General is trying to create, we are going to fund it from there. The setup of the project management office, the manner in which we are receiving instructions from clients, and how we are communicating progress insofar as the work that we are doing is concerned. So we are going to use some of the money to set up a proper project and program management outfit for the OVG. With the additional posts, in terms of the new structure, the OVG will grow quite exponentially compared to where we are now. So some of the money will go towards tenant installations to acquire additional office accommodation, as well as the equipment that the staff would require. I think that's all.
There are two more questions. The other one is the worker organization, whether they have paid for those valuations. Yes, they haven't paid yet, but the agreement we have with them is that they will pay for all the valuations that have been conducted on their behalf. So one of the mandates of the OVG is to generate income, and this is one of the beginning steps for that. So the good thing about this is that for the valuations we've done for them, for example, they have spent much less than what they used to spend when they contracted private values. I think something in the region of while they used to spend over $1 million on a valuation, the OVG is now only spending about half of that in conducting those valuations on behalf of what I think. Now, secondly, is the issue of whether there's been any impact of the valuation process by the OVG on the branches. I am aware that in 2016-17, the LRE branch alone saved over 200 million in terms of payments for acquisitions of land, based on the valuations conducted by the OVG, as I think they used to pay before. So, share that for you to comment in terms of what has been happening.
Follow up. Honorable Babama, Honorable Christian. Chair, unless I was speaking, I don't think my question around the ability of the quality review and assurance mechanism to be independent was answered.
And I know that I was not sleeping. But my two questions have not been dealt with. The very first one, when would your office have its fully fledged team of followers? The second one, I
admit it was quite expansive, was on what consideration would your office ever find no value? I know you went to town explaining to us that you were still keeping with the old tradition that all valuations are based on market value. You know, you're going to pay for that. But I would like to know if you have got any provision in your regulations for giving zero valuation, or whether you have, as a matter of procedure, have to give some grand valuation. Those are the two.
That's a big question. That's probably without compensation.
Thanks, Chair. Sorry, I think we missed those two questions. The first one around when the OPG will be fully capacitated. This is a progressive exercise. Even though we've got a structure in place, in terms of strategy, we think that the filling of those posts will span over two financial years, because we need to progressively phase in staff and train them and make sure they are ready to perform. So in terms of our strategy, we think that the OPG will become a fully fledged entity in terms of the structure over a period of two financial years. Now, expropriation without compensation and valuation. Now, what the OVG does is to determine value. Now, there are scenarios where, in normal valuation practice, you can have a negative value for a property. And so, what normally happens is that when you arrive at a negative value, that is given a valuation of one rand. And the question around whether the OPG will be arriving at zero values, I think it is not something that we have to plan at OPG. It should result in the valuation process. The valuation process should come out with a value. Whether it is zero or negative, we don't want to determine upfront. But we can give instances where valuations can result in that. Now, if you look at let's start with an easier one. For example, we have already determined zero values for properties owned by the Department of Public Works that are the subject of land reform. So we have determined that. How did we determine that? We looked at all the five factors. We looked at market value, we looked at government subsidy, we looked at the issue of acquisition and the currencies of the property. So if you take a property owned by, as I said, the Department of Public Works, that is vacant, it would have the current use of nothing. So that current use value would be zero. Then you determine the market value. Then you look at how much government has assisted the department in acquiring those properties. And we have determined that the government has actually paid more acquiring those properties than the current market value. And so that's a scenario that would result in a zero value. You can also look at instances of private ownership where the current use, the land is lying fallow. It is not being used. So the economic value on that property would be zero. Now when you weigh that, and when you look at market value, you look at highest and best potential. When you look at current use, you determine the current use. And if the current use is that the land is lying fallow, that will go to complement market value in such a way that you start regressing towards a negative value or zero value. But we have not yet determined that for privately owned land yet. We've only determined zero values for properties owned by
we haven't finished the
question around the valuation review committee. Mr. Moshelin will deal with
The intention of establishing the committee was to support the Valuer General in doing his work. So that committee is actually the committee of the Valuer General. He will not sit on it. It will be populated by professionals. So the extent of their independence is to the extent of their professional ethics. So we're looking for a chartered accountant. We're looking for two valuers in private practice. We're looking for an agricultural economist. And these are professionals who would be registered to the extent of their professional bodies. So they would then sit on that committee and they would do these assessments and review on a sample basis the work that the OVG has been doing and produce reports with findings and recommendations to the Valuer General. So it doesn't sit on it. So it is to that extent. I think the question of the wording that says within the OVG is perhaps a wording that can be improved, but the idea is that it's a structure that is external to the OVG and is meant to support the Valuer General.
Any further questions?
I think there was a question of the grant, that the type of the grant that's not reflected in your way is reflected.
Yeah,
that's, yeah. So we need to improve that graph. I think we missed the 64 million on the graph itself. When you look at the numbers at the bottom of that graph, the first one, those numbers, that series does not run up to the 64. And we can improve the graph. But the number is correct. The 64 is correct.
Any other questions?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair. It's just a comment, but before that comment, I would start by wishing the late Honorable Makopula, Eastern Cape Education MEC, heartfelt sympathies to him and his family. He's just passed on. I don't have much life in the struggle, but in my 33 years of political involvement, I think he has been with me every other year, including us sharing the sector and deputy sector, respectively, in the province. That's Chair. But I'll also come on another issue, and I hope Parliament was firmer, Chair. The community support must never summon our members in less than 24 hours to a meeting. Not now, not in the future, and in any other committee. I'm prepared to lose my job standing for that principle. Some of us stay deep, deep rural in the bowels of this country. And just to go to the airport is really quite an effort, and to get a flight and all that. They must not do it. They must not do it. Not these ones in this committee. I wish these things were on. I can see they are not on. It's unacceptable. You don't convene members of committee in less than 24-hour notice and call them here. It's not an emergency meeting, ordinary meeting. But Chair, and further issues. Committee support must be committee support. If they want to be politicians, they must then get into the political tickets and challenge for seats, including in the government party, challenge us out and get in. I can't sit here for more than an hour juggling between two meetings, that of the WIPARI, that of the IPU session, and this committee. I think more than an hour, there's no register. And statistic and data talks. You know, committee support must just wake up. Must just wake up. And not argue with us. Chair, I want to go to the issue about the OVG. I'm worried about you training valuers than you putting these systems to turn around the valuation system in the country. The role of training valuers, with due respect, and quite cautiously and very broad-mindedly, is not your primary role. It can be that the Valua General is training, Valua training institution. The Valua General must turn around the system. 24 years, the Constitution pronounced the five factors that you were mentioning. 24 years, yes, your years are 2.5 to 3 years of existence. Your focus point is how to implement these five factors. Simply, we want these five factors factored in. And you know what you have done so far? It might be a loophole. I'm making a comment, Chair. It might be a loophole because now all government value has no value, it's zero. So these big gurus can go and really scrape all government land, all public works must sell land by means of valuation, by their own standards. It's worth zero. But fallow land by the farmers and everything, my minister likes this and I agree with him. Fallow land by the farmers leaving everyone, the white farmers leaving everyone with 4% would have value according to you. You should have gone further and said, if it's fallow, that farm by a private farmer is also worth zero. In the same manner that the public works thing would be worth zero. I'm really worried about that pronouncement. I think it would have a very, very serious interpretational consequences. That zero factor when you are answering one at the same time. Because fallow farms would not be worth zero. In fact, people would need a neck and a water to get government to access those farms to get in the flat farmers into the mainstream, you know. So, Valua General, and my last comment, Chair, the restitution has performed less now, and part of the reasons is the bottleneck at evaluations. Why are you doing that? Why are you hindering the work of a fellow stream within the land, the broader land portfolio? Now, restitution cannot move at its own pace. It has become less. The last aspect or lack of my commentary is that where the five factors have not been factored in, the fact of the matter is that white collar crime by those white valuers is rampant. Whenever they were charging the state, they were charging the state the arm and the leg. So within even the current Western style valuation system, the question would have been to get in there immediately, stop the unscrupulous thing. A property worth 20 million, call it a farm. The private seller would just willingly say 34 million with collusion. So your office gets in catalytically, even within the current framework, to say that this is worth 20 million, even according to the Western valuation. I call it Western because it's not consistent with our constitutional model. Those are the comments, Chair. But the Office of the Valuer General must wake up and smell the coffee. The whole debate in the country hinges right through to that point of the valuation. And most of the people talking land, they are not aware. But we are aware. So unless if that office becomes a catalytic, otherwise we're really playing marble. Thank you, Chair.
Madam, the
MP
wants to say something.
Thank you very much, Chair. My apology for joining the meeting late. Chair, I just want to clarify this issue of zero value, because we need not to leave this meeting with a notion that we are saying that the private land cannot be zero and whatever is zero. I think I'll take the honourable member back to say when we took over 1994, the land was scattered to many governments. And we started afresh to vest the land in the rightful places. Others were vested under public works, so still state land under public works. Others were vested in the communal, others were vested in the state. So now, for example, if a municipality identifies a state land, which is lying fallow, they need to utilize as another sphere of government. When we take that land from the national, from the state, to the municipality, we can't sell that land. It's zero value because it is underutilized. The municipality wants to utilize the land. There's zero value, that's why the OBG said in a book value of 1 rand, because there must be exchange of ownership. And the exchange of ownership from national to the municipality, it is valued at a rand. That's a transaction to change the ownership to one sphere of government to another sphere of government. So now I just want to clarify that, to say it's not really to say now the OBG is failing to make the private land a zero rating. He has explained that it will happen that this is a land lying fallow, is private. In terms of economic activity, is zero. In terms of certain issues, is zero. Therefore, if that particular person sells that land, then there will be lots of negotiations because it is not utilized, it's lying fallow. It has no value in an economic sense. There's no person who's occupying that land. So I'm trying to say there's a lot that we need to look at. It's not that there's any other failure, but it might happen that our explanation was not really very clear. Just I wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
Thank you
Dr.
It relates to ensuring that the branching media plan, and I think we take that as the open hearing. Our work is to assist the process. We have an agreement with the acting DG, and that is that the OBG, even though we are an entity on our own, is not going to operate as an entity in isolation. We work very closely with the branches in the department to ensure that the challenges we have faced are resolved together, so that you see, our mandate is to accelerate land reform, so we cannot lose sight of that. And the acting DG has now put steps in place. There are regular meetings to ensure that our work is aligned to the work of the branches in the department, and I thought that's a very important point to make, that we admit that we have learned some lessons through our developmental phase, and we are addressing those challenges together with the department as an entity to ensure that we support them over and above what we are currently doing. The role of government in private practice, and I can confirm with the committee that we've already actually reported a few of the values to the regulatory body because of issues of misconduct. So we currently have investigations going on against individual valuers that have misconducted themselves. I think you can mention you agree that we've got, I think, 4 or 5 valuers that are currently being went through an investigation by the Council for Valuers. Lastly, the OBG is now a member of the International Valuation Standard Council. Now, why are we doing that? Because you referred to the Europeanization of the profession. So part of that input of becoming a member of the International Valuation Standards Council is to influence what goes into those standards as far as developing economies are concerned. So I also thought that's important to make that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Who is the current deputy Land Claims Commissioner. I've got
Lenani Mukhati, who has been acting as Chief Planning Commissioner for the past month. And I also have the Regional Land Planning Commissioner, Freddy Maput. He's got many names, but I speak to them. Thank you very much, Chair. I will be presenting, and I will also be supported by Francis and the other political issues as they arise. The outline is as stated. I'm not going to go line by line. And some of the slides, Chair, I will summarize because I think that we all are aware that the Commission really is obligated through the Commission Act, and that our role is really to support the broader mandate of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, which is a critical access to land and sustainable use of land for development to be promoted. I think it's important because with the land debate, there's often a misconception that the institution is land reform, whereas we are only but a part, we contribute towards land reform in the country. Our strategic objectives, the first one is land rights restored, where we have to facilitate the restoration of land rights and alternative forms of equitable redress, equitable land dispensation and agrarian reform. And again, the other issue is the fact that our mandate for now is to redress land rights lost after 1980. There is work that is happening by the department that seeks to that deals with disturbations that happened before 1913, and this is part of the broader land reform strategy. We also have responsibilities in terms of our internal strategic objectives, improve governance and service delivery, which focuses on organizational change management and just making sure that the type of entity that we are is one that is dedicated, result-oriented and professional. And part of the work that we're doing around that is the outcomes that came through our mini-lab of the Pakistan mini-lab, because it's given us guidance in terms of the strategic policy, the type of entities that we want to set up and all of that, but we can speak to that later on. We also acknowledge that we have a lot of work that we need to do around our customer satisfaction and communication. We're putting strategies in place to deal with that. Number five is the clear organizational mandate and the business process supported by resources. This also is consolidated in our practical outcomes, where we are envisioning the type of commission that we should be, which is effective and efficient. Also, number six is improved information and project management, which also started out when we reopened in 2014, where we actually managed the new claims process, where we received claims electronically, as opposed to the 1998 time where same forms were handed out and which created a lot of problems for us, where it was very difficult for us to do reconciliation in terms of the number of claim forms that were received. We also want to improve our reporting and responsiveness and promote service delivery. I won't go into the vision and the mission. And for the financial year, and just a summary of the service delivery achievements in terms of the operational budget, the commission, in terms of our financial expenditure during the first under review, we spent 99% of our budget. We allocated the budget of 3 billion, and 3,998,000. And we spent billion 93. I know that you'll see, I think in page 17, we there's an incorrect figure there, but the correct one is this one on page 7. And the chair apologize for that. summary in terms of the service delivery achievements, the hectares and land that was settled and set up by the HP of the Commission is that we settled 63,000 hectares of land and 12,000 of those which benefited 12,000 households and 6,000 of those were female-headed households. And this relates to an overall of 3.4 million hectares that were settled from 1994. We continue again in terms of the achievements for last financial year. We settled 850 new claims against the target of 1,001. This was a steep target for us, but we had set it for us because we were saying that as we had promised, we wanted to really start fast tracking the settlement of all the outstanding old claims, and so that's why we had set the target. I will explain in the following slides why we didn't achieve. Finalization, our target was 865 claims and we settled 700. I mean, we finalized 867 and the target was 1704. Phased, our target was 105 and we only achieved 71. Our research, our target was 915 and we actually researched 1197. In terms of the 850 performance of settled, as already indicated by the Director General, the one issue that we have had is the slow turnaround in the Director General's office. Yes, we are acknowledging that a lot of effort has been put in place to try and resolve the issues, but it has been a major challenge for us because if we are not if we don't get valuation, then we're not able to make the offers. But also, if the other issue is that once the offers have been made, the valuations have been made, we still have to make offers to the land owners. And the land owners are now starting to reject the Valuer General value. And that also delays the process because then sometimes there's a to and fro between ourselves, the Valuer General and the land owner, where the land owner begins to say no, but we didn't consider this aspect, or we want to make presentations to the VG, and so that also then delays the process. But as the VG has already indicated, it's work that we are working with them, with the VG, so that we don't find ourselves in the same situation. As I already indicated, once the land owner refuse or reject the offer, we either then have to go back to the VG for them to negotiate, or then the matter will have to be ultimately referred to court, and that's where a lot of our expropriation cases are going to come from. And just again to indicate that it's not expropriation without compensation, it's expropriation based on just and critical, and which means then again that we will have to rely on the Office of the Valuer General actually presenting their cases in court so that the court is able to make a determination on the five principles that we discussed earlier. So for us, this is the work that is still unfolding that needs to be clarified in terms of once the Valuer General has submitted a value and the landowner rejects it, who then interfaces between the landowner and the Valuer General on the value. The Commission does not necessarily have a right or mandate to even negotiate on the value that is in the center. But there's already, as you heard, the issue of capacity then in the VG's office becomes a challenge because if all or most of the landowners want to know how to get to the value, I don't agree with this, you didn't value this value, then we have to wait until all of those issues have been resolved. And if they're not resolved, then the landowner can also say to the VG, I want you to give me a report explaining how you got to the value that you got. And that process might end up in court, and therefore we have to wait for that, for those issues to unfold. I think that's the important thing for me to say that this is a terrain that is evolving. We're all acknowledging that the VGA, the Property Valuation Act was just introduced in 2014, and so even the law around the actual implementation of this as it relates to expropriation, using the physical redress issue, is going to have to be refined by us implementing it and also approaching court for guidance in terms of what is right and what is not right. There are a number of issues that are not necessarily clear around the question of how we approach the court, but that's a discussion for another day. And then in terms of finalized, we exceeded our targets, and again what we did was that when we identified that we were having challenges in terms of the settlement, we focused on trying to push more of finalized claims. Same issue in terms of the FAPE project, because FAPE projects are counted in a similar manner as several projects. In terms of the research report, as indicated previously, we are cleaning up our database, and so in terms of the outstanding research, as soon as the untraceables are presented, then we're able to then add those into outstanding research, so that's work in progress in terms of us cleaning up our research. I'm on slide 14, and this is just a breakdown of the performance per quarter in terms of the beneficiaries and hectares awarded. I've already talked to the specifics. And that is the differentiation now is the land cost versus financial compensation, and if you know, a lot of the expenditure is on financial compensation versus the land cost. We're finding that what happened in the financial year passed, and in fact even this year, is that the provinces are tending now to focus on financial compensation because it does not necessarily have the OPG challenge. And so you will find that a lot of the claims that are settled this year are financial compensation claims, even in the bigger provinces like KZN, Limpopo, and Mpumalanga, which is unusual because most of the time those three provinces usually are the ones that lead with the land reparation. That's just a summary of the outstanding, of the settled claims per province. And again, you'll note that mostly the big three cases in Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and the Eastern Cape that still have the high number of outstanding cases, and they are the ones who are still moving in terms of the number of claims settled. Although the Western Cape also has a high number, but most of those are usually small urban claims, either tenancy claims or registered rights claims in urban areas. Breakdown province in terms of performance, and again the trend is still the same in terms of the both provinces that have the highest number of them. I'm going to just give time for them to look on the financial services government.
Good day. In terms of our financial performance for the previous financial year, we were able to spend 99.9% of our budget. We did have a saving under compensation of employees. It's posts that were vacated and is in the process of being sold. So in terms of expenditure on our household, the household budget is where we pay the projects from. So, when we do settle a claim, we pay the settlement of the claim from financial from our goods and services budget,
but the household budget is where the actual money for the project comes from. So that will be your financial compensation payments, any land purchases, or any development grant that we contribute to the community. So you can see in terms of the various offices, what they have spent for the, in terms of conveyancing fees, land purchase and subsoil, legal fees, financial compensation, and our recap and grant. All in all, we've spent 2.5 billion rand the water finalization of our people plan. Then there's a breakdown of the backlog versus claims that were approved within the financial year 2017-18. We spent basically two-thirds of our budget on the payment of new claims, and then 890 million rand for clearing of claims approved prior to 2017. I just want to add here that as the Auditor General reported, our Act indicates that the Commission is a separate entity in terms of the Restitution Act. And if you read it with the PSMA Section 1, it means that we have to do separate financial statements, even though it's an unlisted entity. We agreed with them then there, but for restitution to become autonomous as a whole and to move out, we still need to go through the process to become a listed entity. And the implication is quite significant for us to go out and become an autonomous entity, as well as to then prepare financial statements on our own. Because we have to have a new financial system, we have to get additional staff to be able to fulfill those financial functions which are now within the department. But the big thing is the financial reporting. We are now reporting under GRAP, which is the General Recognized Accounting Principles. And if you're an entity, you have to report under GARP, which is the General Acceptable Accounting Principles. The way that you do your bookkeeping is totally different, so it will have a huge implication for us on that as well. And then we do have a big vacancy on our staff structure, our establishment, and that means that we really struggle to fulfill all our functions, and as well as fast track the outstanding claims. After the Pakisa project, we are working towards the autonomy being an entity, but as well as looking at alternative settlement models and how to be a better support towards our communities. And that also has a financial implication. We've been working with National Treasury, but we all know that the fiscus is under strain and we might not get the necessary financial support that we require in this. We do have current obligations in terms of committed settlements. This, as soon as the minister signs off a 42D, which settles a claim, it creates a commitment. So we have those commitments that we still must clear, as well as the upcoming obligations with settlement of the claim, because that also has a financial implication. One, towards the work being done to settle the claim. You know, we get support through the ODG financing them as well. We have to do verification. We have to go to the community. And then once we have settled the claim, we're going into the finalization stage to make sure that we pay out everything. And that is where we spend our household budget. For us to be able to clear our commitments, settle the claims as fast as possible, as well as give development assistance to the claimants, we definitely need funding there. We have, in the past, since 2007, spent all our budget every year.
I just wanted to make a remark. The commissioner did say that we pay more for financial compensation because we focus more on those claims. But I do think that the way that we do the settlement of financial compensation claims means that the people got increased funding, where with the assistance of the OBG, we are paying less for land than we used to in the past. But because we do historical valuations for people who lost land and now want financial compensation, our claimants actually get more money. So when you look at the physical amount that we pay, we give our people more in terms of financial compensation. And the land is costing us a little bit less, and that's why the two look like that at this stage. Thank you.
Thank you, Pastor. The next slide speaks to the litigation monitor, just to indicate that we continue to have matters that are referred to court, either for review or referral because the parties are not agreeing on the question of validity of the claim, or where we are being compelled by the parties to either pay because they feel that we have taken too long or issues related. We also have a lot of CAIA, which is the access to information requests from various parties. And as you can see, we also have a number where we sometimes it's a declaratory application or interdict to compel us as a commission to act on specific issues around the claim. But at the year end, we had 341 cases that were in court, and also 174 of those were matters that were being dealt with by the Land Rights Management Facility, which is the one that is being managed by manager of the firm. We continue to look at the cases that are before court to see possibly if there are matters that need to be negotiated and settled so that we don't proceed with litigation unnecessarily. We have 41 cases where we've got a contingent liability. We always have to make sure that we monitor the cases because very often when the case matures, you find that you have a liability that you have to pay as a commission in terms of whatever decision of the court that is made. And again, you will see the trends that, again, the bigger provinces are the ones that have the biggest numbers of cases that are in court. Just to discuss again on the Constitution Amendment Bill, to say that in terms of the financial year end, we are aware, and as the committee is aware, that a private member's bill was introduced and that the commission is participating in the process. Any further developments or developments that have happened in this current financial year will be reported in 2018-19. But we are participating in the process. Francis already indicated our human resource capacity issues. That's just a breakdown in terms of the demographics, and that right now we're sitting at a total of 714. We must also acknowledge that recently the DG has assisted in approving that we seal samples, so that will be a reprieve for us. That is just a percentage of employment for employment in terms of gender and race. And the vacancy rate in terms of the calculation done is sitting at 37.3%. We are hoping that it will improve in view of the approvals that we've just recently received. Is there anything else that I've looked at?
Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Honourable members have been listening to the presentation. Before members ask questions, let me correct what is on page 23. It's until the end of 2019.
Thank you, Chair Person. You have covered most of the questions that I was supposed to raise, but one or two. Thank you, Commission. CLCC, first. When I go to be autonomous and be independent from the department, it's a long time we're discussing this fire. What is the status on land restitution amendments up to now? I'm aware that Parliament has requested an extension, and the Chairperson has corrected to be March 2019, not March 2018. Lastly, what type of amendments might be needed by La Mosa to the Constitutional Court, except those that were raised in the Constitutional Court? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chen, for the presentation. I just want us to look at the politics and perceptions that result in this trend where a lot of people prefer cash settlement over land acceptance. This is a matter that I know that we've discussed over time. And I think the time has come for us to get to the grips of it all. My take, Honorable Chair, is that one of the major reasons why people prefer cash over land, and I'm saying this because this particular department within the Department of Rural Development, they always spend their budget in time and almost to the last cent. And a lot of money goes to the finalization for the settlement of the claim. Whereas perhaps if people chose land, would be spending less cash and having more people acquiring land. So that's why I'm bringing it up. Now, my understanding is that people prefer cash over land because of the depressed economy situation. They want ready cash rather than land, for which they must still find money and be able to plant, and then finally after 6 months or 4 months, they're able to reap something. Now I know that we have in the past asked the department to look into this, to come up with perhaps the perceived or research answers as to why people, you know, prefer cash over land. And I'm just wondering if at this point in time, as I'm talking about this for something like 2 to 3 years, you have done any kind of research to find out what it is that drives people to prefer cash over land. And I'm asking this because, you know, the fiscal environment is very much constrained at the moment, and I'm looking at ways in which we can get more value for our rand in this particular, you know, context. And so my question is aimed at finding that solution so that more people go for land rather than cash. I wouldn't want for this particular unit to be seen to be spending cash just like that, only to find that in fact they are paying for sins, so to speak, you know, that have been committed elsewhere, a depressed economic environment. So I would like to get your comments on that. That's why I said, let's look at the politics and the perceptions that results in these high cash outflows. And that's all that I'm concerned with in this particular unit. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I must say that Mungudu, this is great work as usual. And I just have a couple of questions. I'd like you to explain bullets 2 and 3 on page 10. The non-acceptance of offers from claimants and landowners, especially in those provinces, if you can just expatiate on that. And then I don't understand this thing of the valuations that are historic. It was identified that historic valuations conducted by the appointed valuers through the OPG don't still align themselves. If you can just explain that to me in layman's languages. And then I'd also like to congratulate you on the 55% of female-headed households. I think that is excellent. That is excellent work on your part. And when I say your part, I mean you and the team. Could you explain why you need a recap grant in this scenario? Well, why would you have a recap grant? And then I don't see a statement of the commitments that you guys spoke about. Could you just talk to the commitments? What are the numbers? What is happening around there? And you spoke of a what that the minister has to sign? The D, what? 42D that the minister has to sign. Could you just explain it? I think you explained it before, but since we don't work with it, we forget it. Land, oh, just an equitable compensation. You said something around that. Could you just recap on that as well, because I think it's important going forward for us to understand in which cases would you use the just and equitable compensation and who would decide on it. And also my last point is there a time frame on disputes? If I'm disputing, if I'm a seller or I'm a claimant and I'm disputing anything, are there time frames? Because obviously you can't have it open.